950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, to the Matt McNeil Show for your Monday, hour number two. Thank you for being with us. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I got a lot to get to the beginning of this hour here because of the story from Brianna Beerschbach in the Star Tribune. Basically, and I'm just going to give you a very brief, and I'll go through the story more here in a little bit here. There is a push tucked into one of the budget bills that would provide more, basically, Republicans, they want to basically take over a lot of the sites. You can put government in charge. This is, once again, Republicans saying they want to put government in charge of the state-owned historic sites instead of the Minnesota Historical Society. Under the GOP plan, the State Historic Preservation Office within the Department of Administration would take over operation of 16 sites that are now run by the Historical Society but are fully or partially owned by the state, such as Fort Snelling and St. Paul's in St. Paul and Split Rock Lighthouse near Two Harbors. They also, by the way, Historical Society owns a lot of different things. So needless to say, this is an attempt to basically take control away of some of the historic sites from the Minnesota Historical Society. Now, I'm going to be very straightforward. We have worked and talked with the Minnesota Historical Society for many years on my show. I am a massive fan of their organization. They are the oldest run historical society in the country, and frankly, I think one of the best run organizations I've ever seen. That's why the first thing I want to do here before I get into the story and talk more about it, I want to bring in someone from the Historical Society to talk exactly about what exactly they do, how they manage these sites, and how things have been going. And kind enough to join us right now is Kevin Myla. He is the Chair for Education and Senior Director of Learning Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. He's kind enough today to join us to talk a little bit about their organization and how they run their sites. Kevin, thank you very much. Welcome back to the show, by the way. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Well, thanks for inviting me. Really happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here. First of all, once again, Minnesota Historical Society, it actually started, correct me if I'm wrong, it started before the state was even a state, right?
That is correct, absolutely.
It's the oldest one in the country, too, right?
It is one of the oldest and one of the largest in the country. We've been very fortunate, of course, our association with the state and the funding they provide, but an incredible private arm that supports us, endowment dollars, earned income, a variety of things. We're just fortunate to have great opportunities across the state to talk about history and really dive into it with the public.
And by the way, I'll never pass this up. I'm a member. It's a fantastic membership. Bang for the buck, 100%. Go get a membership. The sites you'll be able to see are just wonderful. And really the history of the state and it is there across the state. You've run so many sites here. Obviously the most common ones, I mean, we talk about the museum, over in St. Paul, of course, yep. Split Rock Lighthouse, which is iconic in Minnesota, and Fort Snelling, a lot of other sites, too. How many total sites in the state is the Minnesota Historical Society operating right now?
Sure. We have 27 sites, some that we hold in preservation, a number that are operated by partners around the state, and then we run 14 directly through our works here. And again, some of those owned by the state, some partially owned, some owned by the Historical Society. They all have this kind of interesting history of how they were acquired or brought into the network, just a really great mix of stories geographically from Split Rock, which is one of my favorite sites, down to Jeffers Petroglyphs, which if you haven't been there, you have to get to this summer. Just a fantastic place to really see the prairie and see 10,000 years of history in one place.
I want to talk. So when it comes to, I'll bare bones like an annual thing. You've got we'll take historic Fort Snelling.
Sure.
You have, I imagine, every year, and it opens for the summer. It's open. Is it open now?
It is. We're still in the midst of our revitalization construction project, so we're only open a couple days a week, Fridays and Saturdays through the summer. This year, we'll be reopening that site next Memorial Day fully with a brand new visitor center and brand new experiences. But yes, it is open right now.
You have people on site at all your sites here that sit down. Talk a little bit about the planning. How do they look at presenting the site in that given year? Is there a process that people go through?
Sure, absolutely. So we've got core programming that happens at all of our sites. And we can take, let's say, the state capitol just down the street from me right now. We run a tour program there that focuses on government. We've got tours that focus on art. We really bring people through to understand the history of the building. So we've kind of got a standard program. And then we run special events every year as well. So we might do evening tours that take you up to the Quadriga and really show that. And we're excited because the capitol is going to be opening back up on Thursday, and we'll start to bring the the public back there as well. But we do have staff at all of our sites who really think about programming, how to tell the complex stories that are there, how to do it in a fun way that engages audiences from four to 99, right? You really want to create entry points for everybody because people's understanding of this history is different. And you want to be able to have the kind of conversation to introduce people, but give opportunities to let people get in depth on some of the stories, especially a place like Fort Snelling, which is incredibly complex and dense and really important history for all of us to know.
You as well. I mean, I'll bring up Oliver Kelly Farm. You talk about the diversity mm-hmm. there, Grange, the history of the Grange, history of farming. They had me hold back a cow one time. but then you also do these special programs. Your organization, top to bottom, each of these sites, they're not just hiring people off the street. You are getting some of the best and brightest in history to come in here and develop a program that represents the history of the site, correct?
That is absolutely true. And, you know, we have staff that have been at some of these sites for 15, 20, 25 years. I myself have worked at the Society 21 years. And these staff really dive into the depths of the history there. And they bring their expertise not only in that content, but also thinking about what is a good quality experience. Because, you know, the old trope about high school history was people lecturing at you. That's not what we do. We really want to bring people in, do experiential things like holding cows or sheep at the farm to really looking at and trying to figure out what a petroglyph represents at a place like Jeffers Petroglyphs, to just going up to Split Rock Lighthouse and looking at the lake and understanding how we connect to the world through some of our historic places. So those staff really are professional. They bring their professional degrees, they bring their years of experience, and they bring that perspective of our job is to serve the audience and tell the stories that matter.
I want to be very careful how I say this. That's not something you just can transfer over to a governmental department, because the thick layers, I mean, you have to understand all the individual sites. You have to have the understanding of the history of the individual sites, the complex history of all the peoples involved with the individual sites. Mm-hmm. That's not just something you can just take off of a burner and just give it to, oh, here's your file on this. It's far more complicated than that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're proud of our record of bringing the stories of these sites for the last 50-plus years to the people of Minnesota, but it's also about the preservation that we do, the work that we do to keep these buildings up, to modernize them where they make sense, to preserve them in ways. And this is nothing against the Department of Administration, which would, under this bill, be in charge of this through the State Historic Preservation Office. That is not their expertise, and they've said as much as they've talked about this bill as well. It also creates sort of a duplicate system, because this would only transfer some of the sites, so we would essentially be duplicating the work of how to administer and more staff to do this. So from our standpoint, it really makes sense to stay with the Minnesota Historical Society. We continue to work with the Department of Administration and state government on how we handle these programs, how we handle these properties in really appropriate ways, and how we interpret them. So you know, from our standpoint, we feel like we have a good track record, and really hope that that bears out as this bill goes through the final processes here in the next few weeks.
Kevin Mila is joining us right now. Once again, he's Chair for Education, Senior Director of Learning Initiatives over at the Minnesota Historical Society. I want to take it even a little bit further here. Mm-hmm. If you go to Historic Fort Snelling, I mean, that fort really, for the most part, did not exist. It had gotten through expansion of the old military fort and development. Yep. It had pretty much been lost. A lot of it had. I think they were using one of the round towers as a hairdressing salon at one point. But there is not, and with all due respect to the fine folks at this administration office, they're not going to go on out there and did what you guys did, where you did the research, you did the archaeology, you did the historical structure. You understood not only where the walls were, you rebuilt the walls, you brought in the Dred Scott story that you brought in there, because there are these complexities, and obviously a major point in American history that touched onto Fort Snelling, for goodness sakes. You know, you have, I mean, I remember reading in the history magazine the efforts you guys went just to find where the flagpole was at one point there. That is not something that some bureaucrat in an office is necessarily going to take, and it's not that they don't have passion, it doesn't mean that they're not competent, But will they go on out there and try to tell that story by bringing back the history as it was? Because that's a lot of work with a lot of incredibly smart historians at the Historical Society working for decades to get that done. That's not just something you can replace by just shifting it to a different department.
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement, and we have a lot of respect for our colleagues over at SHPO. They bring an expertise, and they have a different mission than what we do. So, the work that they do to help preserve properties across the state, make sure things are cared for appropriately, the care they put into that research they're doing with us and in our archives and in our collections. So, again, it feels like sort of the wrong fit, and in particular because we do hold all that expertise, a lot of it, and work with external partners to do that work and interpret it to the public. It feels like it makes a lot more sense to keep it where we are. If there are criticisms or any concerns, let's work through that and figure out what people feel may be missing or whatever it is, and keep that structure in place to really manage these properties the way they need to be.
I'm going to just let you answer the following question on your own. I think the Historical Society has done a very good job of finding the missing voices. The long lost story of a lot of the Native American voices that you guys have put forward. The Japanese school for World War II that you put over at Fort Snelling, you talked about that extensively. There is a lot of stories, the unique stories of as Minneapolis St. Paul develops and the state develops today. When you bring in all of the voices and you try to make sure that the history is represented there, there's not a nefarious nature here. That's just history, right?
Yeah, that's part of the process of history, right? We've been adding to the narratives at places like Fort Snelling and even the Alexander Ramsey House or James J. Hill House, Mill City Museum, which we operate in Minneapolis. All of those are really places where we can tell a more full story, right? And that's part of the job that we do. And I ran Fort Snelling as the program manager there for a number of years. We started talking a little more openly and honestly about slavery and how it connects to this place and our time in history, talking about sort of the role of the military, the role of that site, and connecting it to the world, the positive and the things that maybe aren't as positive, right? That's a part of examining history, understanding it from many different perspectives. And I appreciate you saying we're doing a good job of bringing those stories. We got a lot of work left to do where we need to connect with communities whose voices maybe haven't been heard. And at the History Center here in St. Paul, where I am today, doing exhibits where we focused on the story of the Hmong immigration and other groups, the Smallies in Minnesota, and in things like the Civil War, where we do things that maybe people consider more traditional. We want to add to the narrative. We want to make sure people understand that history is for everyone. And ultimately, we think history is about empathy. It's understanding other viewpoints and making sure that you're not missing a really important element of a story, because what happens there is you're shutting people out. And we really want everyone to be a part of the stories we tell at the Minnesota Historical Society.
It's really the simple. It's not an agenda. It's just history. That's all it is. It's history.
It's not an agenda. Every generation Every generation, as we learn more, as we bring more voices to it, that's part of that additive nature of understanding, right? You get more information, it changes your viewpoint just a little bit, maybe. Or maybe you don't consider that, and that's up to the consumer to really think about that. But our job is to try to bring all those stories so that people see them and hear them.
I think your organization does a great job. That's me personally, and I'll say it all day long. I've seen historical. I've visited historical sites. I've been to many of the Civil War sites. I've been to. I've been to traditional villages. Plymouth Plantation is one of my favorite places. Mm-hmm. That they do a great job out there in Massachusetts with that. Of course, Washington D.C., Philadelphia. There's a lot there. You guys are up there with the best. You guys do a great job there. I will highly once again encourage everyone to go become a member. And if you feel as if the Minnesota, and this is me, I'm saying this, this is me, Matt McNeil, only me. If you feel that Minnesota Historical Society is doing a good job, contact your legislature. Let them know Minnesota Historical Society is doing a good job and things should stay as they are. I think that's just me saying that, but that's just me. Kevin, thanks to everyone over there. I think you guys have been doing a great job.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. And thanks for bringing this up on your radio show today. Really important to be a part of that conversation. We really want people to, let us know what they think, whether it's positive or negative. We want to be able to respond to that and make sure people see themselves in the history we represent.
Kevin Myla, once again, is the Chair of Education, Senior Director of Learning Initiatives at the Minnesota Historical Society. Kevin, thank you very much for the time. I do appreciate it.
No problem, Matt. Thank you.
All righty.